Today on Compassion Radio.
He said, you guys, this is a youth communist party building, and this is a fundraiser for the youth communist party, and they didn't know we were Christian.
Great start.
Okay, we're the only gospel group to raise funds for communism, but they're the only communists that ever sold tickets to a revival.
Hello and welcome to Compassion Radio, the daily radio journal that walks with the trailblazers of faith. And they're still out there. Sometimes they're hiding right under our noses, so to speak. Our guest today, and for a few programs to come, is one such, quote, regular guy who didn't settle for small potatoes thinking in his own faith. When God brought him into community with other like-minded people with similar faith and some useful talents, big things started to happen all around them. Thanks for joining us today. Sometimes God brings you new friends that you discover are actually very old friends because you've been traveling the same roads together without even knowing it. Today's guest is like that for me, James Gilbert, an author and an entrepreneur of missions, is my best way of describing you personally. Welcome to Compassion Radio.
Thanks, man. That's actually a great term. I'll start using it. That's good.
Fair enough. I don't copyright anything. You can have it. You and I have crossed paths without knowing it so many times through so many people that we both know and love together that I'm always amazed that God sews together lives like that.
You're right.
But I keep telling my kids that if you'll just stay on the leading edge where God has you, even though it seems lonely, God always seems to bring together the people at that very place that you tend to go and you find your tribe. It seems like you've been doing that for the past 50 or so years. So if you don't mind for our Compassion Radio listeners, in about 5 minutes or so, tell me how God brought you into communications, worship, art, evangelism, and world travel, and now as a comforter of those who are bearing up under incredible stress around the world for their faith. Just give me the story.
Well, I'll do it. I was a preacher's kid, and when I got out of high school in Baltimore, I was actually born in Kentucky. We're all from the Appalachians, but I grew up in Baltimore. I was going to go to college. Got scholarships, was miserable at the first college I went to, but, you know, I was in musical, so I played keyboards and did vocals and all that kind of stuff. I turned down a career heading towards opera because evidently I have a big mouth. but I accepted a scholarship to ORU in Oklahoma.
At that time, they were really building up their music department.
Yeah, they were. They're building up the music department. Earl Roberts had left his tent revivals and was now on national television with specials and whatnot. And so I was out there and I met Ralph Carmichael, who was like Mr. Christian Music in those days, was interviewed, didn't have to audition apparently because I had done an audition tape. I'm compressing this, but I will say this. I didn't want to go to ORU because I thought it was kind of this Bible school setting where, you know, you couldn't look at girls, couldn't really have a lot of fun because my idea of holiness was all the stuff that you don't do anymore.
A lot of people are still that way.
Yeah. My dad wasn't like that, but I thought Bible schools were. Well, I went to a meeting where there was a student from ORU giving her testimony, and she was from a Southern Baptist church, but she was from a charismatic Southern Baptist church, which almost sounded like a contradiction in terms.
That's a rare breed.
Yeah, it is. I saw her and I said to my parents, if that's an ORU student, I'd be willing to go there. We get back home. My parents had seen the campus in person, 1,100 students total. So we went home and my dad got the reel-to-reel tape recorder out and he said, sing something. So I played.
Sing for me.
Yeah, so I played on the left channel and sang on the right channel. That's what you did with reel-to-reel. He airmailed it to ORU, and the next day, the music director said the Lord spoke to him that I belong there. So I flew out there without any transcripts and was in class for about a week before my transcripts from high school even arrived. And then 2 weeks after I got there, because I was on scholarship, I was supposed to sing for Oral Roberts' pastor's conferences, those things he held on campus. And all the music scholarship students were expected to earn their keep, basically. So I went to sing for that. And the music director asked me, he said, I want you to meet so-and-so. And so I met this senior named Larry Dalton, who was a phenomenal keyboardist. I didn't know it at the time. I asked him what key was easiest for him to play. And so this guy's like beloved all over the world as an arranger and a keyboardist. He's one of the best pianists in the world. I didn't know anything about him. He's just a senior. We found out when we met in the lunch line that we were only born 20 miles apart, 4 years, but 20 miles apart. So we were immediately close friends, both two Appalachian boys. I sang for that seminar. And afterwards, he said, I want you to meet a friend of mine, Terry Law. We're both seniors. And we're going to put together a group to do weekends. So I met Terry Law. They invited me to a rehearsal, room A in Tim Cobarton building. The building's now gone. We met there to practice. And then our first concert, this is in February, was at a Baptist church in Kansas City. While we were there, the Lord really spoke to us through someone that we were destined to stay together. Actually, it was already in our hearts to do so. And when we got home, back to ORU, we had to travel all night and sing at 8 a.m. for another seminar. And after that, we went back to that practice room. And Terry and Larry said they're planning to go to South Africa after they graduate. Would any of us be interested in forming a group to go to South Africa? We were immediately all in.
Yeah.
So we spent the better part. I mean, there's a huge drama in all of that. I wrote about it in Terry Law's life stories called Storm Chaser. I had the honor to write that. It took us three trips across the Atlantic to finally get to South Africa. And it's a long story, that one. But
I'll bet. This book is still in print, so it's available to you. Oh, yeah. If you want to read that story, you can find that on Amazon.
Storm Chaser by James Gilbert on Amazon.
There you go.
We spent all of 1970 in South Africa and had an incredible response from the country. It really revolutionized what church meant. We were pioneering, I don't know if this is good or bad, we pioneered drums in church. You know,
there you go.
It became the band-based worship services instead of just a song service, you know, and a choir. So we got back. I remember we were in Dana Point, California in 1971. And Terry said one day, you guys, I think God's going to take us behind the Iron Curtain. All of us are thinking, we believe that, but it seems ridiculous to take a band. How do you have an underground meeting, you know, with a group that's got a giant sound system? We had brass by then because every group wanted to have brass because Blood, Sweat, and Tears in Chicago were playing on the radio and all that, you know.
Right.
So we got a letter in 1971 in California. Mail day came, and we got this letter from Poland, which was obviously hardline communist, under Russia's thumb. So we get this letter saying that we're invited to sing to do a concert in Krakow, Poland. So now we knew one exchange student that was there. What she didn't tell them was key. So we get there in November of 1972. We were touring Europe anyway. We were hardline gospel. You know, Terry Law was not subtle about the gospel. So
yeah.
We had contemporary music with really, you know, kind of in-your-face good news preaching. And it worked great in South Africa and other places because American pop music can take you anywhere in the world. We get to Poland. We get into Krakow. It's in the old town in a club on street level. They had a basement, we found out, the hard way. So we get in to set up. We do our first concert. About three songs into the first concert, Terry Law steps to the microphone, and he had some good words to say about Copernicus and Chopin and some great Polish people. He does that in about 30 seconds, and then he just suddenly says, we're here to tell you that Marx and Lenin didn't know the way. Jesus is the way. And the room froze for a moment, and then grins started to appear, because all these Polish college students, you know, it's a university town. Jagiellonian University back then was 50,000 students. We didn't need translators because everybody there was studying English. Their only alternative was Russian, and nobody took Russian in Poland. So he says what he says. He's telling them his own story. He'd been a teenage alcoholic. They're all sitting there. The room was filled with smoke, and they're all drinking beer pretty fast. The only thing that they could get in communist days was this cheap beer. We do our concert. I'm looking for Terry because when he walked off stage, we just kept singing. So we finish our concert, can't find him. And then somebody says, hey, I think he's downstairs. So we went downstairs, and Brim is like viewing an old B movie about spies. First of all, everything's kind of gray anyway. We get down into this basement. There's a light bulb hanging from the ceiling and a little card table. And he's sitting at the card table and these guys are yelling at him. We all lined up against the wall, you know, out of the way. No guns. I mean, we just lined up against the wall. I looked at him and he had a little crook of a grin on his face. Because Terry loved confrontation. I don't think he had a fear gene at all. They're accusing us of being CIA and all of that. So Terry turns to us. He said, let me tell the team. He said, you guys, this is the Youth Communist Party building. And this is a fundraiser for the Youth Communist Party. And they didn't know we were Christian.
Great start.
So I said later on, okay, we're the only gospel group to raise funds for communism, but they're the only communists that ever sold tickets to a revival. What was happening was that these college students upstairs were cheering everything we said because it was taboo to preach. We're preaching. We're young. We're Christians. We're Americans. They liked us on all three counts. There was a great hunger because of all the suppression. There was a great hunger amongst young people. So anyway, they had made a lot of money. So they let us go on for the second concert because everybody upstairs was drinking and not willing to take refunds. I don't think the refunds even existed in those days with the communists.
The schlotties go one direction.
Anyway, yeah, we did a second concert. Terry wasn't allowed on stage, but the songs were the dangerous part, you know, because they could all understand the songs. And we weren't being subtle in the songs, man. We pulled out everything.
They may not preach your sermons the day next, but they will sing your songs.
They will sing the songs. We were probably famous all over town by midnight and all over the country shortly after that, because it had embarrassed the Communist Party so badly. And anything that embarrassed the Communist Party was good in Poland to the people.
Yeah.
It was strictly the rumor mill. Actually, it was the most efficient form of news, the rumor mill, in those days, because it was all underground. By 1974, we were back in Poland, and then we met Cardinal Wyszyński, the older of the two cardinals. In 74, he opened up the entire country of Catholic churches. And Poland was 98% Catholic in those days, still 91%. Right. And then a little after that, we met the other cardinal, Cardinal Wojtyła, and in 1978, he became Pope John Paul II.
Right.
And then he had the team at Rome and opened up the whole world. So everything just kept burgeoning. Even when we got into the Soviet Union the first time, I wasn't on this trip, but we got into the Soviet Union the first time with one of our teams, because by then we had four teams. So in 78, one of the teams gets into the Soviet Union up in Estonia in the northwestern part.
Mm-hmm.
They had already heard of the group over the radio that they weren't supposed to listen to. And here our guys are trying to make a contact somewhere, so happy they've made it into the Soviet Union, as tourists, of course.
Of course.
We'd bought a tour bus from a tour company in England and just left their sign on it, a defunct company. So we left a sign on it, so we looked like young people on vacation going into Estonia, which was the only place you really ever saw many Western people.
Compassion Radio will continue to keep bringing you encouragement from the Word, inspiring stories from the front lines of faith, and awesome opportunities to make a difference for the kingdom around the world. But we need your help right now to continue doing just that. Please take a moment today to consider how you might help us to accomplish our unique media ministry and mission. Remember, friends, Compassion Radio is always a coalition of the willing. Are you willing to help get out God's good news stories of the kingdom really living the gospel in the 21st century? Oh, I hope so. Thank you, friends, for standing with Compassion Radio during these times of great change to our normal life. Of course, there's nothing normal about our situation, but there's also nothing normal about the kind of faith and power we find in Jesus. Just visit our website, CompassionRadio.com, or call our toll-free order line, 1-800-868-2478. And note our new mailing address, which is P.O. Box 77160, Corona, California, 92877. Again, that's Box 77160, Corona, California, 92877. And now, back to the broadcast.
We looked like young people on vacation going into Estonia, which was the only place you really ever saw many Western people.
Jim, let me stop this story just for 1 second, because it occurs to me after all this discussion that we never even named the group. So there are probably people that are listening to this conversation saying, who were they?
Sorry.
So go ahead and let us know what you and Terry Law founded.
We called it Living Sound. We kind of inherited the name. When we did our first concert back in Kansas City in 1969, we didn't have a name. We were just students from ORU. And so the pastor was advertising on the radio, and he just said, come and hear the Living Sound of the Oral Roberts University students. And so everybody thought the group's called Living Sound.
I think DJs name the best groups.
So,
there you go. Okay. Roll us back forward again now. You've already gone through Poland. Yeah. You're now into Estonia.
Right.
Masquerading as tourists like we usually do when we're going in forbidden country, so to speak. What happened there?
The group's now 9 years old. We've got four teams on the road. We're working so hard to figure out a way to get in there. We finally get in. We're trying to find a contact. When we finally found the contact, a guy named John, he took us to an underground prayer meeting. Within 24 hours, they packed out the biggest church in town, which had several hundred seats, mainly with young people. It didn't take long. I mean, a Christian group from America. I mean, groups from America, even rock groups, didn't tour there.
Uh-huh.
You either were in a tourist hotel, or the only other place to have a concert would have been a church, and it wouldn't have been allowed. But we struck before the KGB even found out. We found out that that group had heard about us 3 years earlier on Polish radio.
Hmm.
And that youth group had prayed God would bring Living Sound to the Soviet Union, to them. And that was the first place we wound up.
Awesome.
At their church. So then that started opening up stuff, much to the chagrin of the Soviet secret police, the KGB. There were all kinds of encounters. But, you know, the Soviet Constitution technically allowed freedom of expression in religious matters. They said that the church is separate from the state, but the state is not separate from the church. So in other words, the state can do whatever it wants. But their constitution kind of gave us a loophole.
Yeah. Lip service until they're actually pushed too far, but you can work the margins for a while.
And if they banned us at a border crossing, we could get in at another one. Because the one thing that's beautiful about giant bureaucracies is that they're extremely inefficient. So we could always go into another border crossing that they didn't know about us.
Right.
So the group kept getting in.
Another lesson I'm hearing time after time, and I saw that the next 30 or 40 years I traveled with Continentals, people start praying for things and God starts doing stuff.
Yeah.
But it's not just that they had this initiative, this great idea, and then went and told God about it. It seemed more like God serendipitously pushed you in front of that speaker to hear something he wants you to hear so that you will pray for the thing that he intends to do. And so by the time you arrive in Estonia, their courage and faith has been built because they know that God placed something in their hearts that they appealed to God for. And of course, the answer was absolutely going to be yes, because God was already in it.
Yeah, you got it. That's true. Jimmy Carter boycotted the 1980 Olympics in Moscow.
Yes, he did.
But what that caused was this famous jazz artist over there. We were meeting all these artists because the best gig that a musician in the Soviet Union could get was a tourist hotel.
Yeah.
So we were meeting all these leading Soviet artists, none of whom wanted to be communists. And so we got invited. I think the Soviet government thought it would be an embarrassment to the U.S. to invite an American group to record the Olympic theme song.
Mm-hmm.
Not da 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 da, not that. But their theme, so fine. The group accepted and ended up all over the radio, all over the Soviet Union. And things just kept progressing. I left the larger teams in 1979. By then, I was speaking, I was playing keyboards, I was emceeing, and I was preaching and singing.
Sometimes all at the same time.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. So I was doing solo work. So my wife and I went out on our own under the umbrella of Terry Law and Living Sound. Then we incorporated our own ministry in 83. Meanwhile, we were going into USSR just on our own. When the large teams couldn't get something in, we could get stuff in. You know, we would smuggle stuff in. But we could get in a 30-something couple from the U.S. We got used to being followed around. We knew we were being followed around. We knew all the tricks that they did. We recognized certain agents' faces. You know, we were pretty good at avoiding detection. And in fact, they couldn't figure out why we kept going back. But we kept going back.
I'm glad you did.
And then we incorporated January 1st of 83, which is sounds ancient now.
It is.
We're, 41 years ago. And I got Terry Law to be my vice president. I told him, I said, it doesn't matter how many prime ministers and how many kings you meet, you're just my vice president. Forget how famous you become. You're just my vice president. So I felt superior. I mean, we were great friends. You know, I kept doing what I did. I started going into even more countries. I think boots on the ground, I'm up to 62. Slovakia was number 62, although we didn't get to minister there except to the border guards.
Mm-hmm.
That was to get into Ukraine recently. So, you know, we'd gone into Ukraine. Dolly, my wife and I did in 1980. We'd been there. Very different, of course. The whole world changed after 91 when the Soviet Union fell apart. And these places that had been so dowdy and gray and ugly and just despondent became bright. Development happened. All kinds of Western businesses came in. Poland is one of the most beautiful places you ever want to go. So, yeah, we started doing stuff in all kinds of new countries and going back to old ones. And then I started going to Cuba in 2006, started going to Bulgaria the same year. You know, Cuba's still communist. Bulgaria's more free. And then in 2007, into northern Iraq with Terry Law to a new church that had formed north where the Kurds are. You know, Kurdistan is a province of Iraq,
right,
but it's semi-autonomous. And frankly, it's their cash cow. They won't give them their independence because the Kurds have the better work ethic and just more industrious people, marvelous people, actually. I mean, they're technically Sunni Muslim, but they have a saying, Kurd first, because they're descended from the ancient Medes. They're proud of Cyrus to let the Jews go back to Jerusalem. They're not anti-Jewish. I think it's the only large Muslim group that's not anti-Jewish. And they're pro-Christian. They're just a really decent people.
And one of the few major groups in the Middle East that even gives a flying flip about the Yazidis, who are right next door to them.
Yeah.
They have been a place of shelter and refuge for a lot of people groups in the past 30 years.
You know, in fact, Bram, Terry passed away at the end of August of 2020. His eldest son, Scott, and his wife, Kathy, live in Tulsa. What Terry had wanted to start, they've started, and that's a home for Yazidi widows.
Awesome.
Because almost every Yazidi woman became a widow under ISIS. They hated Yazidis even more than they hated Christians, which is really saying something. They've got a home for Yazidi widows that they keep supported. There's good ministry there to those people. Terry and I, when we started writing together, when I wrote his life story, he was going back to Iraq. He got involved in trying to get a man out of prison because he'd been put in prison, even in Kurdistan, he'd been put in prison for evangelizing Muslims. And the people who had him arrested cooked up charges against him that were not just about that, but that was why he was put in jail. And so Terry said to me, I'm going to go over there. Now, we had good contacts over there, but he said, I'm going to go over there. I want to meet whoever it is that's in charge in that area. And so he was put in contact with, I won't name the man, but he's put in contact with one of the prime minister's officers, like a cabinet level here.
Right.
And to free someone from prison with those charges had never been done. Terry and I talked it over before he went, because I was in the middle of writing his story, where he said, man, what do you think? I said, well, look, just say, you know, this would look bad. I mean, Kurdistan has been very brave in the face of past enemies. This is before ISIS, mind you,
right,
a year before. But if you were to free this man, it would be great publicity for Kurdistan and for Iraq. If you don't, then what can I say that's good about you? So Terry went over there, and the man actually liked him and liked the idea and took it to the president of Kurdistan. And for the first time ever, they granted the equivalent of what we would call a pardon here and let the man out. He ended up elsewhere. I didn't use the name of the real city or the man's real name in the book.
I understand.
But Storm Chaser ends on Terry's 70th birthday, when he's receiving that man at an international airport with his family, great celebration. The ironic thing, Bram, is that as that book ends on April the 8th of 2013, Terry's 70th birthday, he's celebrating with those people on the same night, several hundred miles away in eastern Turkey, a terror group was announcing its new name, and it was ISIS. I didn't know that right in the book, so nobody knew about ISIS.
Every page is flipping very fast in history now, it seems like.
Yeah, it is.
One thing does not become an era, it becomes the next chapter, literally.
Exactly right. So the book ends there. The story goes on, obviously. Our lives go on. You know, I've been to Iraq several times. We got ambushed by Iranian terrorists in northern Iraq in 2017, and God preserved our lives.
Took a lot out of you, I hear.
Yep. A year later, we found out that the Iranian General Soleimani, the one that was droned to death a couple of years later, was the one who had plotted that. The Kurdish defense minister told me a year later, their plan was to take you back. You were going to be the next set of orange jumpsuits on television.
Uh-huh.
You know, the Lord preserved us. And when COVID hit, we could not go back to Iraq. And they're still having problems. So we haven't been. My friend, I don't know if you know Stephen Mansfield, but my friend Stephen Mansfield and I have gone back. Stephen is a well-known author. You know, he wrote The Faith of George W. Bush and Mansfield's Book of Manly Men and The Search for God in Guinness and great books. And we've been friends long before he wrote his first book, as a matter of fact. So he and Terry and I were working together over there. And now he and I have stayed in contact and we look forward to going back. Meanwhile, when the war in Ukraine started, I really sensed that we were to take, my wife and I should somehow help. We have more mutual friends with you that work over there. I know you interviewed.
Indeed. We'll talk about that too. And that's pretty much where we got to put the pin in this first chapter of your story, because it is the bridge that brings us to present day. And I do want to focus on the things that we're involved with presently. But I hear a theme about God preparing you for the things suddenly. And like we talk about all that chronos we go through for that kairos moment, that God just breaks through with something new for us,
yes,
not new for him.
Right.
But in so pursuing it, we have to walk the path.
That's right.
And it's the people that don't walk the path that love to be the critics. You have the honor, and I think the burden, as you said, of having walked a difficult path all these years, but you wouldn't have it any other way from the way you put it before. I'm proud of you for that. And you are the guy that's, you know, five steps ahead of me on the road, learning these lessons. And I intend to lean into that wisdom over the years to come, because we find ourselves in the same rooms now, trying to encourage those who are on the front lines nonstop. That nonstop pursuit of God's work in redeeming individuals and nations is something we'll talk about on our next program. But Jim, I want to ask you, if you could boil it down to a bumper sticker now, is there a theme that you could say is the best description of your path from being a young musician through all of these years to be on the front lines of faith? How would you sum it up?
C.H. Spurgeon said one time that as long as Jesus is in the boat with you, it's not going down. And the safest place to be is in the center of God's will. I think that that sums up, I learned some decades ago that the safest place to be is where God wants you. Huh. And if it happens to be Moscow, it's Moscow. I can deal with Moscow easier than I can deal with Chicago, because I don't have the grace for Chicago. But I had the grace for the Soviet Union. I had the grace for dealing with Ukraine. I had grace for dealing with communist Poland. It was an adventure, I just didn't know a lot of these things were as dangerous as they were until after the fact.
Yeah.
Now, if we're going through something hard, I'll just look at my wife and I'll say, it's got to be a great newsletter.
Yeah.
That's the only way to get through the tough, scary times. So yeah, to realize that you're safer in the center of God's will. In Storm Chaser, it's the eye of the storm where there's calm. As long as you stay in the eye, you're safe.
Indeed. Interesting how that eye travels as it goes, though. It doesn't stay static.
Right.
And you can't find a place of safety that anchors to this earth. It's always anchored in Him.
Because that's where He is. God is in the eye.
My thanks to James Gilbert for being our guest today. His story is just getting started, so I hope you'll tune in for the next installment. In the meantime, you can learn more about Jim's writing and his ministry on the podcast page for this program at CompassionRadio.com. Call us at 1-800-868-2478 and P.O. Box 77160, Corona, California, 92877. We need you, friend, so contact us today.